And to his credit, there would probably be a lot of agents that would, you know, maybe throw their hands up in the air and go like, unrealistic, all of that sort of thing. But, you know, to Gavin's credit, he says, well, my owner wants 10, I've got to go work for it.
You're listening to Elevate, the official podcast of Elite Agent for real estate industry sales professionals, property managers and leaders. Each episode, we bring you behind-the-scenes supplier news, developments, exclusive interviews, technology and more to help you list more, sell more and elevate your results. To get access to all of Elite Agent's premium resources, including a detailed episode guide for this podcast, visit joineliteagent.com. Now, here is your host, Samantha McLean.
Welcome, everyone, to our final episode of the Deluxe Nuts. Once again, I am joined by Dave Scow, legend of Wagga. Welcome, Dave.
G'day, Sam. Thanks for having me.
It was great to have you back. Thanks for coming back. We've missed a week, so there's no point pulling the wool over people's eyes. I had COVID, but you know, if you can sort of hear, it's still in my voice, but I was well enough to watch episode 6 of Lux Listings.
Perfect.
So this is it. This is the final episode of season 2, and we found out in your interview last week with Deline that they've actually filmed season 3. Have you seen any gossip or anything like that showing, you know, when we might expect to see season 3 come to our screens?
No, nothing yet. And I think that now that the season 2 has wrapped up and the final episode's been aired, I think that's what we can expect to see next. I have put a few feelers out there. Nothing has come to fruition yet, but all indications are it'll be before the end of the year.
Yeah, I've been keeping my ear to the ground too, and I haven't heard anything so far. So we're just going to have to get by on selling Sunset season 5 between now and then.
Yeah, far out.
Are you a fan of that show?
Yeah, I'm a bit of a latecomer to it actually, and I'm not up to season 5 yet. I'm up to season 4. Yeah, it's a whole other beast.
Yeah, well, maybe we need to start doing a few recaps of that one. Who knows?
Yeah, I'm on board.
Something to keep us busy over the winter months. Anyway, we're up to episode 6, but we still have one more exclusive interview in the can, and that was you caught up with the new star of the show, Monica Tu.
Yeah, and what a great addition she's been to the show. I think that hopefully in season 3 we might see a little bit more of her. There was a couple of episodes in the middle of this season where Monica didn't get much of a show, but what she's brought to the series has been fantastic. She's vivacious. She's everything. She's extra. She's a lot. But she was a real joy to speak to as well. So we sat down and asked a few questions, particularly around her success and where she's come from and how she's gotten to where she is today.
Yeah, amazing. So let's roll the tape on that.
Let's do it. G'day, folks, and welcome to this special interview for the Deluxe Nuts podcast, brought to you by Elite Agent and sponsored by our very good friends at Issue. I'm Dave Scow, and I'm thrilled to be joined by Lux Listings Australia superstar, Monica Tu. Welcome, Monica.
Hello. How are you guys? Really good.
Perfect. Thanks for giving us your time today. We can only imagine how busy your schedule is normally. How have you gone about fitting in filming for the show in your already bustling schedule?
I think the thing is, like, for what I do is that I think I'm very privileged. Sometimes I can't, you know, arrange my time. So this is the commitment I made. I said, okay, I'm going to make time. So you can always make time. So if you want to do something, you can make it happen.
Perfect.
It was crazy few months, but really enjoyable.
Perfect. And look, saying that, we've just launched into season 2 of the show. Had you seen the first season before signing up to take part?
Of course I did. Yes, of course. That's the reason I decided to join too. So loved it.
Perfect. Very good. We've also just had word that the series has been renewed for a third season. How do you feel about that? What can we expect to see from Monica Tu and Black Diamonds?
So which one? Season 2 or season 3?
Season 3.
Oh, season 3. Oh, my God. There will be a lot of dramas. Of course, some incredible houses. And, you know, I think because, you know, I operate not only eastern suburbs, around Sydney, some of the houses just absolutely incredible. A lot of good stories. Yeah, I think, again, you know, I think to make the show interesting, and of course, number one is the properties. So we present a lot of amazing properties. And even, you know, beyond my imagination, you know, So I have a lot of imaginations about that. So it's a lot of, you know, competitions, of course, and among all the talents. Yeah, it's fun. It's fun.
Beautiful. That's great. We saw a lot of you in season two. What were some of the highlights of the show for you?
I think highlights for me is actually the show actually brought us together. I mean, you know, agent, we're very busy. Everybody, you know, three of us running our own you know, race. And so we get together, we do something together. I think that actually brought us together, you know, to understand even more about Gavin, you know, Simon, and of course, Dilling. I think it's really nice to see people working together as well. And as a female agent, and I think it's really nice to chat just beyond the real estate. I loved it. That's number one, I think, you know, highlights for me, to get to know other agents, because I'm relatively young in the industry. So they're like, oh my God, the 30 years dealing, right? So I'm literally only about just over 10 years. So I learned so much from them as well. Yeah. And one thing is, like, I think it's a great platform for, because I do working with a lot of international buyers, and it's a great platform to showcase Australian luxury properties. What is luxury all about? I think I brought a little bit of lux into the season.
I would agree with that.
And I'm proud of that. And again, you know, I'm such an advocate for Australian products, you know, of course, real estate and services. So I think I brought a lot into, you know, season two. I hope everybody will enjoy it.
I think everyone will absolutely agree. Speaking about agents coming together, one thing we saw in season two was you throwing that fantastic co-listing party at the beautiful St. Leonard's penthouse. Some agents may see that throwing a co-listing party like that's a little unusual or a little unorthodox. Is that something that you've done before? And now that you've done it at St. Leonard's, is it something you would do again?
Actually, this is a really interesting question, because I've got asked by, you know, Kyle at the Kiss FM this morning. So, you know, why don't you do co-listing? Because literally the other agent would take half of your commission. But for me, it's like, you know, what is the best result for the vendors? You know, so, but working together, I think who is going to be benefit is the vendor. So you have two people pay one commission, got two agents working for you. It's a little bit unusual, but I'm a very generous, you know, at the end of the day. So let's get it sold and let's get the best price possible. And I do love the other agents, particularly in Gavin's team. You know, Kai used to work for me. I want to see Kai, you know, do well, you know. So this is something people hardly do it, because, you know, why I want to share it, right? So everybody think they can do everything. Now, sometimes, yes, of course we can, but it's a bit of add value for the vendors. And my vendor just loved it. They loved the idea. I said, how could you do that? I said, you know, just let's work together and put everybody on the roof and see some dramas.
Yeah, good. And I think that was a really beautiful part of this season of the show, is that we did see your very generous nature and your generous spirit. That really came across well in the season.
Yeah, it doesn't happen very often in our industry.
I mean, agents obviously have a pretty poor reputation. So I think that you've been a really good advocate for agents in general on the show, to show the general public that we're not all just about the money or just about the commission or moving on to the next deal. And it really is a client first experience, and that's the priority. So from on behalf of the industry, thank you for such a good light.
I think that's something, that's some of the contribution or some of the, you know, I come like a new agent, didn't really know much about the histories of the industry. But I have learned so much. I grow so much. You know, I remember I had another interview with your guys, you know, a couple of years ago, right? That was so green in the industry. But just by look at what I have achieved, again, you know, last year, $45 million, one single house, 2019 national record. So there's a reason behind it. You know, just be generous, but, you know, open your heart and working together. And the vendors, you know, for our high net worth, you know, net worth clientele, or the luxury real estate, the vendor can see that, you know, can see. So it's all about, you know, what you have done now, you know, and then the referrals are really powerful. I think, you know, thank you for saying that. I think it's a bit of contribution to, you know, change some people's mind. You know, let's just open mind, embrace, working with others, get the best result for vendors. You know what? God bless, you know, the better listings will come.
Yeah, perfect. I completely agree. I think it's safe to say also that you're one of the most consistently positive members of the cast. You are such a vibrant and vivacious personality. How do you keep that up all the time? You just always seem to be on. Is that something that you've had to perfect over years of practice, or is it something that comes naturally to you?
I think, of course, I'm born very, you know, like a positive, right? I wouldn't, you know, but keep the spirit, okay? If you do something, you know, because real estate is just such cutthroat, lots of hard work, and just have that spirit. What I say is that, you know, I just want to get job done properly. Real estate become my passion. You know, people say once it's become a passion, it's not working anymore. So I work 7 days a week. I just love everything I do. Sometimes you have difficult cases, easier cases. You know what? Just do the best you can. I never look at the result. I look at, you know, every day, have I done the best I can? So, you know, by doing that, I feel like every day is a new day. And yeah, I just want to do the best. And I can sleep, say, oh my, I've done the best I can. I wake up in the morning, oh my God, I'm still alive. This is another day, right?
Good day.
Just keep the spirit high, you know, positive. And yeah, that's me.
Amazing.
Too much energy, Donnie.
Now that you've had a taste for reality television, can we see you popping up on our screens anywhere else? Can we expect, what's your singing voice like? Would you have a crack at The Voice, or are you more of an SAS kind of girl?
I can be anybody I want to be. But at the moment, I just enjoy the Prime videos. I really hope that people will laugh in the Lux listings. So it's such a, because I have watched a lot of them, Million Dollar Listings, Sin and Sunset, all of them, right? But this show is just so different because it's so real. It's us. And we've got, how can you do it? Because four of us are very busy. But it's not a show. It's just ourselves. So you just present yourself in front of the camera, the real you. It's not hard. So the show is just absolutely fantastic. It's really show my personality, and I loved it. And it's what you see is what you get, and put it that way. And I stick with the last listing at the moment.
Yep.
I don't know, you know, like, who knows, right? You know, what's next? But I will keep my dating job, though, you know? is the best industry. I loved it.
Yeah. Well, you're too good to give it up. So, yeah.
Perfect. Too good to give up. No way.
Very good. Monica, that finishes up for me. Thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate you taking the time to speak with us at Elite Agent.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you.
Take care.
Bye.
Great interview, great catch up with Monica. I would really welcome seeing more of Monica in season 3. I think she's been a great addition to the show. And clearly she is. She plays a big role in episode 6, which we're about to get into today. But before I do, for one last time, a special thank you to our sponsor Issue. And that special offer is going to be running for a bit longer. So as a special offer, listeners of Elite Agent Elevate can get started on Issue today for free. Or if you sign up for an annual premium account, you can get 50% off when you go to issue.com and use the promo code ELITE. That's ELITE. Issue.com, ISSUU.com, and use the promo code ELITE at the checkout for your free account or 50% off your annual premium account. And just recently, I've actually seen some really great real estate open home brochures on Issue. Like, you know, there's some incredible stuff that you can do with Issue. Not only put your open home brochures up there, but you can also like tweet them and stuff like that. It's really, really cool.
Yeah, so, obviously you're listening to the podcast. They've gotten on for their 50% off deal. Thumbs up.
Yeah, really, some really beautiful stuff. Okay, speaking of beautiful stuff, you're looking beautiful as always, but let's go into episode 6. So we're opening episode 6 with Simon and Tammy, and they're amazingly enough, do you remember the Bellevue Hill house, the Amalfi Coast house? So Simon incredibly tells Jen and Tammy that he managed to get it for Adrian for $14.35 million.
Yeah, which is a huge result considering they were talking in that episode when they were showing it that there was expectations around that 18 mark. So that's a great result and probably a real testament as to why you have a buyer's agent like Simon Cohen on your side to be able to secure deals like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, it is a big reduction. I think what we calculated last time was about 20% or something like that. Like, it was actually a really, really big price reduction. So amazing job. I don't know that you might get that much in real life. Like, you know, like maybe some of it was for TV and for the cameras, but well done, Simon, for actually doing the job for Adrian. And as he said in an interview with him a couple of weeks ago, that he's actually bought another few properties for that guy. So obviously, there's a lot of business going on, but gosh, the pressure of a 20% price reduction, I don't know, you know.
Yeah, big bickies.
Big bickies. So the conversation continues on, and if you remember at the end of episode 5, war broke out basically. Talene, Simon and Gavin were sitting around having a meditation session, which Tammy says was more like a mediation session, and that was probably pretty accurate. But thank goodness they seem to have kissed and made up, or something has happened, because Simon and Tammy have actually got an invite to the TRG 2-year party. And who doesn't love a good party? Where was our invite?
Absolutely. Especially a TRG party. Yeah, look, hopefully the 3-year party invite is on its way in a couple of months' time. We'd be down for that. I think it's a bit of a recurring theme. We saw the 1-year party on the boat in series 1. We've got the 2nd-year party coming up later in this episode. And it looks like a great shebang. I'm sure that the TRG group don't do things by halves. So, we'll get into that a little bit later. But it's a good sign of an olive branch, I suppose, being extended to the Cohen Handler team. Jen politely declines. She's not up for the party this time around, but Simon and Tammy are definitely going to make their way over to the 2-year party later on in this episode.
That's it. Pack the passports. Forget the cut lunches. I think it's pack the passports. You know what, Dave? I mean, like, you know that throughout this series, like I love trying to figure out where these properties are. Yeah. And, you know, looking at this property, you know, they said 45 minutes out of Sydney. And this is, you know, obviously there's a lot of carpool karaoke goes on in this one. But as they head out of the city in the Porsche, you know, I'm thinking you're going the wrong way. Like, it's clearly they're going up Bellevue Road. I'm looking at the house thinking, oh, to me, you know, like it looks like Matcham, like, you know, some of the really lovely Central Coast hinterland kind of things. But for the life of me, I can't figure out 45 minutes out of Sydney where that is.
Yeah. And look, that's got to be 45 minutes at midnight with no traffic, surely. Yeah. I'm battling you down from Edgecliff to bloody St. Martin Station in 45 minutes.
Yep, especially if you're going to head that way by going up Bellevue Road. Does not. I don't know what's up with the navigator in the Porsche. But anyway, so Simon and Tammy head off, and now we head over to Carlotta Road and the Elephant Shoe House. So we've seen the elephant. Well, let's talk about the Elephant Shoe House, because it was called that for a really quirky reason.
Yeah, it's the love story between the vendor and his wife, and the mouth movement of Elephant Shoe looks a little bit like I Love You. Look, this was a little bit cringy for me. I thought it was a little bit awkward, especially when Gav was trying to explain it to the potential buyers. But, yeah, look, this is an amazing property. I think that this really fits that caliber of a TRG listing or a TRG property. The open house that we're moving into in this part of the episode is a spectacle. It's champagne and canapes and music and people walking around. Kai and Shani are there as Gav walks in, and Kai technically says, no shit, it's going nuts, indicating there's a lot of people going through the open house. And we see Kai talk about a little surprise that he's got. He does look like that naughty schoolboy, and you think, oh, God, what's he done? Gav looks very pensive and is a little bit uncertain about what's going on. But, as we see a little bit later, it's a really good idea, actually, to talk about that in a tick. The open house is a spectacle. It probably rivals that open house that we saw at the Bondi Beach shoebox apartment. It's an amazing house. It's a unique house, and Gav goes on to explain through the episode just how unique it is for this area. It's an attached home, so it's not a freestanding home. It's been architecturally designed to really maximise the small space that the block offers. But as a result, we're looking at three or four levels of living, stairs. There's just a lot to it. But it is that property porn, absolutely. It ticks that box.
Yeah, definitely. And, I think the vendor wants like $8 million. It's another one of these properties where it's funny, you know, like we're talking about the castle in the brief this morning, like I think 25 years of the castle or 30 years of the castle or something like that. And another vendor that's sort of a bit Daryl Kerrigan-ish in the you can't buy what I've got, like, you know, and this vendor has actually sort of built this house like to everything that they want. And and I remember thinking, you know, stairs, like, you know, so it really is going to be a particular kind of buyer. But then I think there was some sort of record about this house that even though it was over like a lot of levels, like 550 square meters of living space in Double Bay is not insignificant.
Especially when it's on a 350-odd square meter block, like it defies logic, really. Very well thought out and very well designed, obviously. But as you said, the owner is quite emotionally attached to this property, and this is the lesson for agents, I suppose, is, and we've seen the theme a couple of times in this season where sellers aren't really wanting to sell, and so the task of the agent to try and make these deals happen with sellers that aren't necessarily willing sellers or immediately willing sellers, there's a real craft to that. And this property ticks that box as well and meets that brief for Gav. The good thing that we saw after the open house is that Gav straight onto the phone, talking to the owner about the feedback from the open house. And it's a little bit of a double-edged sword because while Gav's talking up the feedback and saying how many people are interested, the owner then changes the goalposts and decides that instead of the original eight and then maybe into the nine that Gav started talking about at the start of this open house, he now probably won't sell for less than 10. And it seems like that's getting into territory which is nigh on impossible to achieve.
I mean, Gavin really starts working the open as Gavin does. And I think, you know, this is just typical Gavin. And as he's showing one of the people around, it's like, it's a good thing that Kai and Shani have actually pulled out all the stops on this one because there's a DJ. And then, you know, as Gavin is leading, one of the people at the open home around, he sees a lady in a red dress in the swimming pool.
Yeah, that's like, quite a surprise.
Yeah, with a sky surprise, a bit of a, like, I don't know, is it a bit of Disney going on? Like, she looks like sort of Little Mermaid meets, you know, I don't know. Well, the Little Mermaid wasn't in a red dress, right?
No, absolutely not. It looks like Cinderella's been thrown overboard or something. And look, it looked a little bit off when I first saw it too. But then there's a beautiful scene where this pool has got like a porthole that you can see from one of the rooms downstairs, see up into the pool, and the lady in the red dress is swimming past, and it's magic. And then all of a sudden, it makes sense. And that it's a really masterstroke from Kai to organise that.
But would you see it in Wagga?
Look, probably not. We're definitely not having any portholes into the swimming pools from the downstairs wine cellar in Wagga. Yeah, look, it's probably a little bit voyeuristic for the everyday Wagga man.
Straight after the open, Gavin gets on the phone to the vendor, which I think is good. If I could sort of improve that by 1%, I'd say get on a FaceTime call or send a video or something like that. But Gavin gets on the phone to his vendor to let him know how the open's gone. And guess what? The owner says, I now want $10 million. So that's that's an increase of about two. Thank goodness Simon's not, you know, negotiating the price drop here. But I think this is something that we've kind of seen all the way through the series is that, you know, the Sydney market being what it was, again, as you said, is like, you know, you might as well try it out, see what you can get.
Yeah, that's right. And this is exactly where having that really focused, detailed information at the back of your head ready to pull out to a vendor to substantiate as to why those expectations may be lofty or to a buyer to explain and solicit an offer at that owner's level because it represents value, blah, blah, blah. And that's something that Gavin has done really well throughout this whole season, that he has this absolutely intimate knowledge of the market in every pocket that he operates.
Yeah, that's that detail thing again, like, you know, like he's completely manic on the detail. So, and to his credit, you know, like there would probably be a lot of agents that would, you know, maybe throw their hands up in the air and go like unrealistic, all of that sort of thing. But, you know, to Gavin's credit, he says, well, my owner wants 10, I've got to go work for it. Like, you know, it's almost this, all right, this is what he wants. I better go. Hustle.
Yeah, and as much as he sort of says to the owner, look, I think 10 is probably getting to that point where it's unrealistic for this, this, and this reason, at no point does he try and talk the vendor out of that. At no point does he discredit the vendor's wishes as to wanting to try for that 10. So, yeah, he does a really good job at that.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So let's jump in the car with Simon and Tammy and head out of Sydney. Tammy's done her homework on this house. So they're going to go and have a look at the house where the TRG party is. Like I said, they said the property is 45 minutes out of Sydney, but, you know, the continuity in that whole scene just doesn't add up. You know, we get a first look at this country estate or something that they're calling the country estate. And, I thought it was beautiful.
Yeah, me too. This is definitely Wagga's version of Luxley Sticks. This is the kind of property that we would see in my area at that high end, high spec, beautiful grounds, sprawling ranch style home, amenities to the eyeballs. And this is all because Simon's had a phone call, coincidentally, from a buyer who's looking for acreage in Sydney. So it couldn't have worked out better, really. And Gav has told him that there is the possibility that the owners may consider selling for the right kind of money. So how much of that is real and how much of it is for the episode, I don't know. But it's definitely a great opportunity to get another look through another really spectacular home.
Yeah. I just want to have a moment here for Liam, actually, because the second I saw this property, I was thinking, oh, if only Liam was still in the series. You know, we'd have llamas and all sorts of things at this party, but, you know, like it's not to be. Anyway, we've still got a party to look forward to and I'm here for it. Simon and Tammy do a look through, and I think Tammy's actually doing a really good job of being the agent here. She's clearly done her homework. You know, as for Simon and Gavin, you know, like I do think that they'd rather talk about work than talk about their feelings, although Simon does make a joke about canoodling with Gavin in the jacuzzi, which, you know, I don't know, makes me a bit uncomfortable.
Canoodling wasn't the right word.
I don't know about that, but Thank God that scene ends and we're back with Gavin and Kai, and they're on their way to meet Monica.
Yeah, that's right. So the conversation about Monica's co-listing opportunity at the St. Leonard's penthouse is back on the cards. She's ready to make a decision, I suppose, as to which agent she's going to invite to work with her in the marketing and listing of the $18.5 million penthouse at St. Leonard's. And at least this time, where Gavin was really dismissive of it earlier in the season when the opportunity was presented, and then we saw the TRG boys all go to the co-listing party with a very notably absent Gavin, at least Gavin's sort of taking this a bit more seriously this time, and Gavin and Kai together are going to meet Monica for lunch, what it looks like to be at McMahon's Point. And, Gavin really starts working Monica as soon as they sit down, really. And he's a master at that. I was going to say master of manipulation, and it's not really manipulation, but it's definitely saying the right things.
I actually love this scene, because you can tell that, you know, like Monica's ready to make him work for it.
And
she knows exactly what's coming, which is going to be, you know, Gavin's going to just fire hose her with the Rubenstein charm. So, and it's like, you know, like beyond anything else, I also think it's really nice now that even though Gavin didn't attend the co-listing party, that he's had a bit of a think about it. And because, you know, like Kai is an important member of his team and Kai clearly wants this, that he's actually sort of going, well, right, you know, one of my team wants this, I'm going to have to support them.
Yeah, correct. And look, Monica really does make them work for it too. It's not a walk in the park by any stretch. She quickly fires off at Gavin and says, where were you at the co-listing party? You didn't even bother to attend. And he's probably a little bit on the back foot from the start, just where she wants him. but then is very direct in asking why TRG, why are you the ones that that we should be co-listing with? And again, to Gavin and Kai work this really well, both together, not in a good cop, bad cop kind of way, but in a good cop, good cop kind of way. And they're very quick to be able to respond with A, their unique selling proposition, their key points of difference, their elevator pitch, why TRG, and look, the reasons behind it are that they're new and young and fresh and emerging, and they're tech savvy, and they're not the stale, older school ways of what they think that the Deleans and Palliers may be. They're the other options. So, and then Gav goes straight in for the jugular and does the hard close there and then. And it pays off.
Yeah, everyone, cheers to that, and we all move on. I think just worthy of note, like, you know, when Monica does say to, Kai, why should I choose you? Like often, the way that plays out in various sales situations or various listing presentations or, you know, like whatever situation you happen to be in, often you're not lucky enough to have that question as to, you know, what makes you different or why should I choose you? It will come in lots of different disguises. But I think the real lesson there is to really understand what your point of difference is and be able to have it roll off your tongue really, really quickly like Kai did.
Yeah. And as we've said before in these podcasts, questions like that aren't designed to try and catch you off guard. They're not trying to, typically the vendor or the client in this situation, Monica, isn't trying to discount you, but they're giving you that opportunity to close the deal. So the questions are great. If you're getting asked those questions, that's a really positive sign. I'd be much more concerned when you're not getting the questions at all.
Yeah. I often think too that, to just to this point as well, like, because obviously if this was a real life situation and you know, you had two people sizing up whether you wanted them to work together or not, let's face it, so much of the research is done online these days that, you know, like, you know, in the real world, whoever it is that's doing the asking of that question would have a really good idea of, whether they want to work with you or not already. What they're really looking for is the confirmation that the in-person experience and the in-person answer actually matches what they think they know. Yeah. Because if there's a mismatch there, it can all go horribly wrong. But if there's a match there, it's like, okay, this is what I think I know to be true. Okay, it is true.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah. So with that, we're choosing Gavin's won the co-listing or Kai's won the co-listing. So now we're going to head back to Carlotta Road for an auction. Yep. And for the final time this season, Cooley and his magical tie make an appearance.
Yes.
It's going to have to be a magical tie to get that $10 million for the vendor. So, there's lots of serious faces. And, speaking of faces, Dave, I reckon I've seen some of those faces at the auction before. What about you?
Yeah, absolutely. There are definitely some familiar faces. Particularly the one that stood out for me the most is the lady that in season one was a client of Simon's trying to buy the house that Michael Pellier had, or the apartment, no, the house that Michael Pellier had with that gun barrel view down to the Harbour Bridge, and missed out, and it sold for much more than she was willing to pay. I don't know how I feel about it. It probably makes the experience a little bit less genuine for the viewer in a show like this. Look, she may very well have been there. She didn't make a bid. She didn't look like she was buying this place, and it's certainly completely different to what we've seen her looking at in the past. She may have genuinely been there as a supporter to an interested party or a bidder. I don't know how I feel about this one.
It's interesting though, you know, like, because I was thinking about it too, like, you know, could you use real buyers and sellers? And there was clearly some in both series there have clearly been people who are really, you know, like Janet from season one comes to mind, you know, the elderly lady in Bellevue Hill that that Deleen did the listing presentation with. I sort of wonder, you know, like, whether, you know, how keen real people would be to be on the show. Sort of auctions are such a high stress kind of thing, particularly if you're the one doing the bidding and if the emotions are real and all that sort of thing. So I don't know, might be best, but I was bad. I'm sorry. I pressed pause and zoomed in and looked, and then I pressed pause again and zoomed in and looked, and it was definitely her. And then I think, not that the same people don't sort of chase agents around at every auction and every open that they have, but I reckon the two guys that, narrowly missed out on that property in episode one, the ones that I think pointed out look like, tech millionaires, I think they might be actors too.
Yeah, just quite like possibly. And look, I think the problem with the lady from season one coming back to this auction is that she had quite a big role in season one. Like, she was speaking to camera, maybe not speaking to camera, but speaking, had the private tour with Simon. That filled up sort of a good 10 minutes of an episode. So she was a bit more prominent than perhaps just a few of the fill-ins or the extras in the background. And I think that probably made the difference. If they have been there and not participated, not spoken before, rehash them and use them again at every auction that you need to use them at. But if they started to speak or put their hands up for a bid, they've done their dash for the show, I think.
Yeah, that's it. They need to find another extra, or need to find another one of Kyle's relatives or something like that.
Anyway. Yeah, that's right.
Moving along. So magical, the swimming pool girl isn't there this time. So, I think she's probably had her moment. But $7 million is the opening bid, and Gavin says it doesn't matter where an auction starts, it only matters where it finishes, which is pretty good advice, actually. Don't sort of worry too much about the $7 million.
Yeah, that is somewhat true. At the same time, though, I've seen a lot of Cooley's auctions, and he is very quick to discount a first bid or an opening bid if he thinks that it's too far away. So I think in real life, I personally think that a $7 million opening bid, he probably would have been knocked back by Cooley if it was a typical auction on a typical Saturday morning, because it is a fair gap between $7 and $10 million. And I mean, look, you're working in increments of $250,000 or whatever, maybe not, but then he's looking at increments of $100,000 at a time. That's a lot of bids between the bottom and the top. I don't know. Yes, it doesn't matter where the auction starts, it matters where it finishes to an extent. I think that there's a caveat there that a lot of good auctioneers know when to knock back a bid that may not be in the best interest of the process.
Yeah. Well, we do know that starting at such a low number, that means Gavin's going to have to do a lot of hustling on the auction floor. Yeah. Without repeating that old chestnut again about strippers and bucks parties, Gavin does get to work. And the bids go up and, we get to a certain point and Gavin calls the vendor and says, my advice is to put on the market. So gets to 9.5, and we know that the vendor wants 10, but I think this is probably again where a good agent comes in and a I don't want to quote Kenny Rogers, but know when to hold them, know when to fold them, kind of thing. Yeah. Like, so that moment of actually saying, look, I think you should declare this on the market, because you want the momentum to remain, right?
Yeah, correct. And look, there's a lot of benefit in selling under the hammer on auction day as opposed to letting it pass in and negotiating in the week after. It is all about that buzz of auction day and the heightened emotion of spirited bidding between a couple of buyers. I suppose that the sage advice from Gavin is that if you call it on the market now, the worst thing that's going to happen is that there's not another bid and you've sold it for 9.5, and the best thing that can happen is that we exceed 9.5 and get closer to your dream price. And look, I think he does a good job of convincing the owner that that's the best thing to do. And ultimately it turns out that it is the best thing to do.
Yeah. And the hammer comes down at 9.725, which is not too shy of that 10 million. So, if you were the vendor, that would be you'd have to be pretty happy with that being a record for an attached property in that area. And again, like being such an unusual property, I think you'd have to be pretty happy with that.
I think so. And look, I mean, on the flip side, the glass half full in me says that that's $725,000 over that $9 million dream price that we were talking about when that open house first started. And even Shanice sort of said, what, $9 million for this? Like, that seemed like it was going to be a pretty big ask. So I think 9725, particularly because it was a record, but that seems like a really good result.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well, that is the final hammer of season two. Done. And so it's time to party. So let's get in the car and head off to the Airbnb. I still can't work out where it is. Might be Belrose. I do think that I saw a little bit of Monica's penthouse in the, you know, in the foreground, which maybe, you know, if it's looking over St. Leonard's, it could be somewhere out that way. I mean, who knows? But all right, kids, don't try this at home. But we see the boys drive up in an open Land Rover, and I'm just wondering how the hell is that legal? No seat belts, nothing else. And, you know, like, I mean, you know, boys being boys and all the rest of it, but let's gloss over, you know, like, they're, sometimes things are done for TV and road rules might be one of them too.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, let's pretend that that's, that didn't happen.
So Gavin has some more news, you know, that he's alluding to in this that he's going to reveal in the party. Monica and Jad arrive looking great, some bikini babes, like, maybe it was the girl in the red dress just attired differently, who knows. I love Delene. Delene reminds us that real estate parties are boring, but she's doing it for the boys. So, and then Simon and Tammy arrive.
Yeah, that's right. And look, I think Simon's a little bit apprehensive about what kind of reception he's going to receive from Gav when he first gets there. And look, it is a little bit frosty, I think. It's a little bit awkward. Shanae and Remy are there. They're all hugs and kisses to Tammy and Simon. Gavin's sort of on the side. G'day, mate. How are you? Yeah, good. How are you? It's a little bit frosty, but, yeah, look, they quickly... Gavin quickly extends the olive branch and says, mate, let's go and have a chat. It's very reminiscent of the chat that he and Shanae has in season one. I'm expecting that come to Jesus meeting where they go and take a walk on the beach and only one of them comes back, but it's a little bit more lax than that. Thankfully, it's a little bit more jovial, and they reminisce on their childhoods and how long they've known each other for, and that they're practically family, and their families are practically family. And yeah, look, they hug it out, they bury the hatchets, and we put that little tiff to rest, which is nice. And look, Gav says a really poignant line about business being business, and he does remind him not to fuck him over again. But apart from that, that some things are bigger than the dollars and the cents.
Yeah, absolutely. It is the reality show chat has become a real thing, hasn't it? Like, it doesn't matter which reality show you're watching. If there's conflict, you can bet your life there's going to be a chat, and it's going to be awkward.
Yeah, correct. Chat's not a great word.
So this is where everything sort of gets tied up in a nice little bow. So Delene announces that the Lang and Simmons deal has been pulled off. Monica sold the birdhouse, so $9.88 million, which is not too far off the 10 that they wanted. 10 was the number. And now this means that Simon has to now go for karaoke with Monica. And I want to go with them badly.
Me too. Get me a ticket to that.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Simon, Monica, if you happen to be listening, Dave and I are all in.
We're free.
We're here for you. So the next thing, and this is kind of reminiscent of, I don't know, this scene just felt like Daniela all over again, but we're about to meet Remy 2.0.
Yeah, and she really is Remy 2.0. It would be a tough gig stepping into someone's shoes like Remy when they're in a very tight office, a very male-dominated office full of bravado, and the TRG Boys Club. Monique seems friendly, but she doesn't seem like she's got a lot of mongrel in her, and I think that you would need a bit of mongrel to be able to be Gav's right hand and to work in the TRG office. Look, I don't know. She's a bit airy-fairy for me. She seems a little bit ditzy. It may just be the way that she came across on the camera, but a bit like Daniela, she seems a bit flighty.
Yeah, well, you know, I think we all know that if it doesn't go well, she's not going to be there for long. Like, you know, she's going to go the same way that Daniela did. Maybe she came from the same acting agency. Who knows? I mean, you know, like, we're making all sorts of assumptions. This one, but. Yeah, so Gavin goes and takes the microphone, and I'm wondering, you know, with all this talk of karaoke, is he going to, you know, it wouldn't surprise me at all if he can sing, but the moment we've been waiting for, which is Delta. Delta comes in for a private performance.
And look, we've literally been waiting all season for this. We saw the little teasers at the very start before season two dropped that Delta had a cameo. And yeah, she's there. Gav also explained, does the old thank yous, thanks for coming, so proud of what we've done in the last 2 years, blah, blah, blah. The Whites have given us their blessing to open the second office, which neatly wraps up that little point that we've seen throughout this season as to what's going to happen with Ray White and Gav's ambitions to take over the world. So yeah, it's nice to see that that's been put in place. Delta gets up. She has a bit of a sing. She's tall. I've never met Delta or seen her in real life before, but she's a big woman.
Yeah, she's tall. Like, you know, I think, you know, seeing her on The Voice and stuff like that, you know, because she's a hugger, like, you know, which is the lovely thing about her. And every time she would hug someone else, she would seem like a whole foot taller than. So, you know, like I can only imagine Gavin was. The scenes that she was filming with Gavin were, it was probably a little bit of a mismatch, but she's lovely.
Yeah, she was great. She was a good addition to the show. Then we sort of finish up with Delta having sung her song, talking with the three OGs, Gav, Delaine and Simon. She throws in a line about keeping an eye out for somewhere where she can record the new album. If they come across anything, and then it's like the ears prick up and they're in fight mode again, and they're fighting over who will who Delta will buy off. So yeah, it was nice.
Yeah. Pan. The camera pans back, and that's it for season two of Lux Listing Sydney. We are dun dun dun. You know, like, I guess the end of it, you know, like knowing that there's a third season on the horizon, and like, let's go through our top moments of this season in a second. But, you know, like, I just felt like, where are the cliffhangers?
I think if we didn't know that there was a third season coming up, I would have assumed that season two was done. That was it.
Yeah,
two that nice two season run. It was good while it lasted, and that's it, because there really is. And I don't know, maybe they didn't know that there was a third season coming up by the time they finished filming the second. They obviously did at season one, though, because there was some cliffhangers. Yeah, look, it was a little bit of an anticlimactic ending for season two. But I think that they also probably felt a little bit like that because of how they rushed through a couple of those open points at the tail end of this episode about the Lang and Simmons deal being done, the White family giving their blessing for TRG to open the second office. It just seemed like it was a little bit, oh, shit, we've left these storylines open. We need to close them off quickly, get Delta up on stage, done, finished. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. I'd be interested to see how they pick up season three. We know that the four current main cast members are all back. So Simon, Delaine, Gavin and Monica are all back for season three. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk about some of our favourite moments in this season. Like, you know, if you had to watch any of these episodes again, what were your favourite moments, Dave?
I think the introduction of Monica into the main cast was a big highlight for me. I think that she brought a real bouginess to the series. Gav, Simon, Delaine, they're obviously high net worth individuals. They drive nice cars and they dress really well, blah, blah, blah. But they're not overly outwardly bougie like Monica is. She is glam, and she's all about the glam and all about the sparkle and the shine and the fur. And I think that she's brought that really luxe element to the show. She's also bloody funny. Like, she's very funny in the way that she interacts with the others and talks about herself in the third person, about being skinny and beautiful. And yeah, I think that she's a really good addition to the crew.
Yeah.
What about yours? Yeah. What's one of your favorites?
The Tumor House, I think. You know, I think if I was to come back in another life as a millionaire, I think I could see myself living in that Clifftop House. And, you know, like, and I do think that, you know, the Amalfi House was nice. Like, I'm sort of talking about the properties here, I suppose. But, yeah, I think Charles Tumor's house was absolutely to die for, and you know, and in amongst all of the Lux listings that we saw, that one was my favorite. I think what wasn't there was probably good, because, you know, I know these reality shows get scripted, you know, and I know that there's, you know, there's certain points that they've got to hit, and there are certain similarities between, say, a show like this and The Real Housewives, where, you know that there's going to be a part, at least one party, you know that there are going to be several contrived gatherings, you know that there are going to be the chats, but the chat. But I just think it was really good that they left off out some of the really, you know, let me just call it, there was a few naff things that happened in season one.
Yeah.
You know, a few of the things people said, you know, and like, you know, that were just kind of like a bit ew, you know, like things that you kind of don't like about the real estate industry. And the whole Mousegate thing I thought was a bit, you know, a bit over the top. So, you know, like I'm really glad that they focused more on the property and the deals in this season of Lux Listing.
And probably the conversations too. I think the conversations seemed more genuine in season two than they did in season one. The conversations that we saw the agents having with their clients and buyers, but also, or buyers and sellers, but also the conversations that they had amongst themselves, it still felt scripted. Like, it's a reality show. There's always going to be that level of production, but it seemed a bit more genuine than what season one did. The other thing that I liked from a voyeur perspective was Monica's co-listing party, because that's something that is pretty unique. Co-listing agreements are not out of the ordinary. They've been around forever and a day. They probably don't exist as much in a really hot market like what we've seen this season shot in. But to have a gathering where it's like Fight Club, really. It's like, come and meet everyone in the same house and fight to the death and tell me why that you should be the one that I work with. I thought that was an interesting take on, and Monica obviously spoke about it in her interview with me, an interesting take on how you would approach that situation.
Yeah, I do think, you know, I wonder how many co-listing parties will happen now as a result of this show, because it's certainly nothing I've ever seen before, you know, and you know, yeah, something quite unique to Lux Listings Sydney, I guess.
Yeah.
I think, you know, also nice about this season was that we saw more of Sydney, not just the East. Like, you know, like I know I make jokes about, you know, get me out and get me back to the East and all that sort of thing. But it was actually probably nice that more of Sydney was showcased. Like, we saw more of the North Shore, we saw more of the South Side, you know. Next season, maybe we'll get some Inner West. Who knows?
Maybe. Who knows? Yeah, that was a nice addition. And I think with Monica being kept in the fold with season three coming up as well, as we know, she doesn't deal exclusively in one area like the other three tend to do. So I think that that's probably an odds-on chance of seeing more of Sydney, which is great.
Yeah. Yeah. All in all, I think, you know, Amazon have delivered for us real estate junkies once again. Yeah, amazing. So so we have no word yet on when season three will be out. But Dave, the big cliffhanger for everyone right now is, will you be back? Will you join me again for season three?
You'll have to tune in and find out. I'll definitely be back. I love this stuff. I'm definitely there.
Dave, I want that rose. All right. Well, that's it. We are done. Lux Listing season two, that's a wrap. We'll see you all again. Well, I'll see you again for a regular episode of Elevate sometime soon. But we'll see you again as soon as we know when season three is coming out. Dave, thank you so much for joining me over the last 6 weeks.
Thanks, Sam. I've had a ball.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Elevate Podcast. Don't forget to get access to all of Elite Agent's premium resources, including a detailed episode guide for this podcast. Visit joineliteagent.com.